You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Chris Manning here in the bowels of Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, standing up, recording a podcast. We're still kind of having the draft unfold, but joining me, Jordan Zerm, Up Rocks, Variety of the Places, Ben Axelrod, WKVC. Guys, what's up?
Well, Chris, we're literally in a corner of the very much still under construction Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. The Cavs are coming off the first round where they took three players. And so they're just finishing it up. So, this is the weirdest place I've done a podcast.
Yeah.
By far.
It was crammed.
Yeah. This is, it is very under construction. Like, literally, I think when we walked in, we had to be escorted down here because it's a quote-unquote active construction zone. I've never experienced anything quite like this.
Yeah.
It's very weird. Looks nice, though. Looks like it's come along and smells like paint. Which is very fitting for the Cavs, which are very under construction. Just so people know, we are recording this before the second round is over, before Kobe Allman has talked. So we'll see. If Kobe says anything, I'll at least check it back in later. But Cavs made three picks in the first round. They get Darius Garland at 5. They take Dylan Windler at number 26 after the Shams lied to all of us and said they were taking Kelvin Johnson.
Shams, Jordan Clarkson lied to us.
Yeah, Jordan Clarkson, who's copying and pasting tweets. It's iconic. I wonder what he's... I cannot wait to find out like the story of why he decided to do this after he was breaking free agency news last week, apparently, too. And then they trade back into the first round for 4 second-round picks, which that's a lot of second-round picks, but they're going to get Kevin Porter Jr., from USC, who the organization has been known to love for a while. Ben, we'll start with you. What do you make of this first round for the Cavs?
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I think anytime a team makes 3 first round picks, like the third guy is typically the afterthought. But it feels like the Porter pick is like how we're going to base what we think about this draft. And I like the Garland pick. I'm not going to pretend like I know a lot about Dylan Windler, but...
Didn't know who he was. That's my admission. I had no idea who he was.
Yeah, so there was the little kerfuffle where we thought they were going to take Keldon Johnson out of Kentucky, and like I knew who Keldon Johnson was, but then when Shams tweeted out, no, they're taking Dylan Windler, I didn't know who that was. I know who Kevin Porter is. In one of the early stories I wrote, I mean, probably back in November, about prospects to watch this college basketball season, I remember Kevin Porter being on that list. But clearly they liked Kevin Porter. I mean, 4 second-round picks to – I'm not like – I don't think anybody's a big believer in second-round picks for NBA teams, but that's a lot to give up for the number 30 pick in a draft. So they very clearly targeted – Kevin Porter, and overall, I think they got some interesting pieces. I think this early in a rebuild, that's all you're looking to do is take some big swings, and I think especially with Garland and Porter, they took some big swings.
Jordan, what about you? What's your initial takeaway as round one of this draft?
Yeah, no, I'm very much with Ben in that the Garland pick, the people that I think didn't want the Cavs to take Garland really kind of were like, well, it doesn't fit well with Colin Sexton. I think to Ben's point, like, I just don't think it matters this early in the process, especially when you have somebody as talented as Garland, who I think a lot of smart people felt like if he had been healthy all year, like, would have gone top 3, would have gone top 4. Like, he had that type of talent. So, and the Kevin Porter Jr. thing actually reminds me a little bit of, I forget where Harrison Barnes got taken, but, like, his college career reminds me of Harrison Barnes, where he had, like, a lot of hype going into the season. Didn't really live up to it all the way, and people were like, what's going on with Harrison Barnes? And then Harrison Barnes has carved himself out like a pretty decent NBA career. He has a couple rings. So I know Kevin Porter, you know, there's some stuff that happened with him at USC. He got suspended for a game because of some reasons the team wouldn't divulge, and he had some injury issues there. But obviously the Cavs like him. I know that they have been tied to him for a little while. And you know, like, the thing with both him and Garland, and obviously, like Ben said, like, I don't know anything about him. I'm not going to pretend like...
You didn't watch a lot of Belmont last season.
No, big OVC guy, no, Jordan Zerm.
I wasn't subscribed to the OVC channel, so I didn't get that. So, you know, he seems like he's a good shooter. We'll see what happens with his fit. But, like, with both Porter and Garland, Porter's got a step back that's pretty devastating. Garland seems like a guy that can pull up from anywhere and get a shot off whenever he wants. And I think, like, in the modern NBA, especially for wings and point guards, like, that's really important. And I think, again, yeah, to like what Ben said, the Cavs seem like, and Kobe seems like, they just went and grabbed the players that they like, that they think are talented, and you worry about fit later. And I think at this stage, in basically year two of a complete teardown, I think that's the best way to go.
What was funny about the Windler pick, too, was, so I'm trying to figure out who this guy is and looking at his bio, and I see two-time OVC first team. I was like, if this guy's that good, why wasn't he the OVC player of the year last year? And then I remember John Moran.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
the
yeah,
OVC,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, it's a very good point, yeah. So, I will say this. I come into this process not being super into John Moran, who I know Jordan was more open to than I was, and I was not maybe super open to Garland. But then I think about it, and it is too early to worry about exactly what is being picked right now. Like, fit, it's too early to worry about fit, right? Like, the Cavs need talent. They don't have a lot of guys on this roster that any of us would say are keepers. Like, I think, you know, you look at Jetty, could be. Colin Sexton could be. Certainly came on strong last year. Ante Zizic, okay. Like, Larry is what he is. Kevin, we'll see if they trade him or if they keep him and make him a foundation piece. But there's a lot of expiring contracts, a lot of guys that are not going to be around that much longer, so they need a lot of talent. And if you think Garland's the best guy, you can't pass him. And I wonder what their concerns are about Culver. Obviously, DeAndre Hunter's off the board. They were linked to him as well. I can see, and you can see what they're building. Like, Sexton has a little bit of a longer wingspan. You think Garland's going to come in with the ability to create a little bit better than maybe Sexton did on day one. I think you can see the logic there. It's not what I expected. I wonder, I'm curious to see what Kobe has to say about how Beeline's influence is felt on this particular group of guys. Because Windler seems like the most Beeline guy to me.
Yeah.
But he also hasn't had the access to, like, the thing about his Michigan guys where they were not, he was not getting top 100, top 50, top 20 recruits. He was getting guys like Nick Stauskas, Iggy Brzezinkas, who were later top 100 recruits, and turning them into really good players. Like, he was not getting guys like Darius Garland, guys like Kevin Porter, into Michigan. So, like, this is a higher caliber of talent. I wonder how he'll adapt that in the NBA, which is a different style of basketball than you're getting in the Big Ten anyway.
I was going to say, too, I mean, not like this is something I think the Cavs want to do, but I also don't think it's the, you know, Colin Sexton with the 8th pick last year, if it doesn't work out with him and Garland, I don't think it's going to be I don't think it's going to be like this big tragedy if the Cavs decide, like, we have to move on, we have to trade Colin Sexton, like, we...
No, I love
and
him.
Maybe he has a better second year and they can get better value for him, but I don't think it's like, the 8th pick is a lot even harder than the 5th pick to find, like, mm-hmm. find that talent, and I don't think it's like... going to be this huge deal if eventually they do have to move on from Colin Sexton.
My fear with it, and just my worries with the situation, is there is a lot of overlap, it seems like,
for
between
sure.
what Garland... I mean, they're practically the same size. There's questions about both of their playmaking, and, you know, it's so tough to judge Garland because he played 5 games last year, and, you know, everything about him as an NBA prospect was decided 2 or 3 years ago. Like, we don't know what he's going to be at in the NBA, obviously. But my fear is because there is that overlap, like, does it get to the point where we don't really know what we're seeing from either of them? Like, does it hinder both of them to the point that, you know, the Warriors went through this thing where they didn't know between Monte and Steph, and there was an obvious decision. There was a little bit of that with Kyrie and Dion. I'm a believer in just go get the talent, especially this early. I'm not letting Colin Sexton stand in my way of taking a guy who I think could be a star. But I do think the fit is something to just keep an eye on, you know, as far as how they handle it. Do they both start? Does one come off the bench? And what do they kind of do from there?
Two things on that, too. McCollum and Lillard is, like, the I think when we've talked about this and people have talked about pairing guards, like, that is the what you're going for. That's an anomaly. Like, that is not things that teams have historically been able to recruit. Now, this is a different league, et cetera, but that's, like, hard to do. Number two, there's just no way this is going to be a good defensive duo.
Right.
There's literally just no way that, unless Colin Sexton, like, adds muscle and is a lot better than he was as a rookie and his instincts get better, and his wingspan, that he does have a 2-inch bigger wingspan than Garland, which counts for something, I guess.
Yeah.
But, like, that's going to have to work itself out in some way. You know, zone can mitigate that, I guess, but, like, Jetty's going to have to get a lot better on defense. Nwaba, I think, becomes a more useful player to this team for next season. Porter's Jr. doesn't project as a good defender either. I can't say I know what Dylan Windler looks like as a defender. The early reviews from like the Stepien and stuff aren't great, but like this isn't a great like group of defensive talent either. And that was they were the one of the worst defensive teams of all time last season.
Yeah, and I think that was the big argument for getting DeAndre Hunter or getting even Jerick Culver, where you know maybe Hunter wasn't as exciting offensively, and maybe his ceiling wasn't gonna ever be as high as maybe what Darius Garland could be or what Kevin Porter could be. But then the downside is, yeah, are the Cavs gonna be giving up like 110 points per game or whatever it was that they were giving?
If you score 115, it doesn't matter, I guess.
No, that's obviously what they're going for. But yeah, I mean, there's obviously, you know, I feel like as somebody, as I watch drafts, I always like to look at the positives first. I'm always like, oh, they can do this, they can do this. But then once you sort of go past that, it is sort of prudent to look, okay, yeah, they still don't really have, outside of maybe David Nwaba, they don't have anybody here like, that guy's a really good defender. If you're talking about Kevin Love, even Larry Nance, like anybody on the perimeter, Jordan Clark, like none of those guys are really, there's nobody who's going to be a lockdown defender. So, yeah, that's going to be an issue, and we'll see, you know, what else they sort of do with this roster to address it. But that's going to be, I think, a big part of the growing pains, no matter how good offensively they are, if that works out.
Yeah, I think they raised their ceiling long term. I'm not sure how many wins in the 2019-2020 season they added tonight. Like, I'm not sure this draft was about getting better for next season. And I think the defense, and there are issues with being so bad defensively, because it just kind of like throws you off this cliff and you go through these losing streaks. And I mean, we saw it just last year, but I think they were just looking at upside. That was, especially taking Porter, I think this draft was all about upside, and I think it's interesting having a 67-year-old head coach when you're talking about that. But I think they're kind of I think they'll worry about the defense when they get there, and when they're really concerned about winning games, and I don't think that's next season.
No, I mean it's like when I think about this team, and I think no matter what they did tonight, I don't think that this team has that top 10 protected pick to Atlanta next year from the Kyle Korver trade.
To New Orleans.
And now those picks go to David Griffin, funnily enough, who's the guy who made the trade. That guy just, Infinity Stones, just killing it. But like they're not, I don't envision them losing that pick. Right, and you know, I don't know if they're the worst team in the league next year. You know, I think like there's a chance they could be one of the worst five teams again. I don't think that's an unreasonable thing, especially like let's say Kevin Love gets hurt in the
or they trade him,
right? Like that, like that's where you bottom out, and then your this talent becomes more important.
Yeah.
I think this is a team that needs a lot of talent. This like. I like Jetty Osmond quite a bit. I think he's clearly has a ceiling as a player. I don't think. Like, I think Colin Sexton came along great at the end of last year. I don't think we necessarily envision Colin Sexton as, like, an eight-time All-Star or something like that, right? Like, and there's, you know, people in the organization that I do think, like, that Kevin Porter, like, he was linked to them at, like, five really early on in this process. Yeah. And people think in this organization think he's, like, a top 10 talent. So, like, why not go and get him, right? Like, why not go and take that guy? And, like, it's the thing with Garland. Like, Garland, like, if you clearly think he was the best guy at five, Why not just do it? Like I think the fit concerns are real. They're not going to go away, but you figure it out later.
I was just going to say too. You know, Ben talks about the concerns about fit, which obviously as they go forward, then are going to become bigger. But I also think too.
Colin Sexton, really not to interrupt you, but was on the Yahoo's NBA show with Chris Haynes and was asked about it and sort of was like, "We'll just learn to play together." Didn't see the full clip yet. If anyone has it, like tweet it at me because I kind of want to know, or I'll go back and find it. Jordan Clarkson on that show too, as he was like copying and pasting tweets.
Yeah, he was too busy.
Yeah, too busy giving too busy breaking news. But he was asked about it, so it's interesting.
It is, and then I think like if there is one overarching maybe risk, I mean, you take a player like let's say the difference between like the Cavs taking a Culver or a Hunter, where it's like, okay, your expectations are maybe a little bit lowered for them, where like you know what they're gonna be. And maybe if they underperform a little, you're like, okay, well, I understood what they were being. With Garland, I feel like if he doesn't pan out, it makes the pick look worse because of, A, where it is in the middle of this rebuild, and this is an important pick. Like, we talk about the Browns having to, like, find young players to build and how they were never able to do it. Like, this feels like a pick like that, where this is a young kid who missed time with injuries and there's still a lot of unknowns. And if you miss on this, and Colin Sexton only turns out to be this sort of above-average player, then your rebuild is still very much going on. So I do think if there is a sort of Well, I'm glad they did it. I think the downside of it is that if he doesn't pan out, you look back at this draft and like, maybe you should have grabbed somebody a little bit safer. And I think, you know, time will tell whether or not.
There's more potential for jokes on Twitter about the Garland pick than there were about Hunter or Culver. I just want to ask you guys, like, at what time did the Garland thing become real to you? Like, at what point? Because they had, you know, kind of been linked to him just because they had a top five pick and he was a top five talent. But, like, it really wasn't until we heard about the workout last weekend that things really heated up.
For me, it was the workout, and then even more so, I think, really, it was the pick itself, because we saw the reporting up until they made the pick that they were trying to move the pick. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the teams below them, like, I think when Minnesota moved up, mm-hmm. and then Phoenix moved back, mm-hmm. and then the Bulls were the only other team there that really seemed to need a guard in that way,
yeah.
that's when I was like, okay, the Garland thing's real. But also at the same time, like, I was like, okay, maybe they're going to take Culver. Maybe they're going to take Reddish. But I think it was the workout and the attention that got paid to that workout. And then when Minnesota moved up and it wasn't with the Cavs, I was like, okay, like, yeah. it seems like Garland might be the move here.
The thing that was so weird about Garland was that, he was, like, not planning to really work out for that many people. And then all of a sudden, and I was listening, I forget which podcast it was, but Brian Windhorst said this too. He was like, I heard Garland has had some secret workouts. And then it came out that it was, like, the Lakers, the Cavs, and there was, like, one other team. And so I was like, oh, like, maybe the Cavs have some serious interest. So I remember last week that Mike Schmitz for ESPN has those really great, like, 10-15-minute YouTube videos on prospects. And so I was like, maybe I should watch Garland, because I don't know anything about this.
Yeah.
kid. I just know he was really highly recruited and played 5 games at Vanderbilt. So I feel like it was, like, last week where after that workout stuff came out, I was like, is this somebody I should be, like, learning about? Because it feels like maybe the Cavs have legitimate interest.
I think the Clutch relationship between the Cavs and Clutch is just fascinating, obviously, because of LeBron and JR and Tristan and all that. But I think it was in Joe Varden's article, he said that they wanted Garland in Cleveland.
Well, and they were on the plane together. And then also, interestingly, Rich Paul, when there's a photo of him with Garland at the draft, he's wearing Cavs-colored Nike Cortezes.
Really? Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I gave it away.
Yeah, he knew. Rich knew. Like, in that SI cover, that wasn't about Anthony Davis. That was about Darius Garland getting him to the
Kingmaker.
Cavs.
Kingmaker.
Yeah, that's what this was.
Like, 8 subliminal messages at once.
Yeah. This is obviously instant, and we're not going to know how this draft actually turns out for several years. Like, that's just how this works. But from both of you, I just want to know, my grade on this is I think I give it a BB minus. I think, you know, the fit concerns are real. I think there's downside. Defensive concerns, I think, are very real. But, like, I get it. I think for me, the biggest thing I think that needed to be seen with this draft was some sort of a plan. I think my biggest critique of the Cavs post-LeBron first time was that they just didn't really seem to have a plan. I can at least see the outline of one here. I don't feel like they had that last time. So I could be wrong. They could do something crazy and sign and, like, re-up Jordan Clarkson or something. But, like, I think there's a plan here. And the J.R. Smith, what's going on with the J.R. Smith contract is something we need to see how that's going to affect all of this as well. Because that's that one chip still kind of hanging out there as we record this. But I think I give it a BB minus.
Yeah, I think I would give it the same. I think, you know, there's a bit of a theme to it, because I think both Kevin Porter and Darius Garland are similar in that, you know, they both had a lot of hype and they both didn't exactly have the seasons. Like, Garland, obviously, it's hard to be like, he didn't have the season he got hurt.
And you can't blame him for shutting it down.
But you just don't know a lot. And then Kevin Porter sort of comes in, and they were just mentioning he played, like, the 7th most minutes on USC. Like, he wasn't even a guy that, like...
He had some injury issues.
He did. Yeah. He definitely did. But I think just...
Jordan, I just want to point out, Jordan Zerm's laptop almost fell, and he saved it, and, like, some real OBJ skills saving his laptop from breaking. Yeah, no, it's okay.
So I think the theme between both of them is, like, the potential. It's just, the potential is huge, mm-hmm. but you're just not going to know until, they start playing, and then that is sort of, it's going to be a little nerve-wracking as we go through these upcoming years, because, like, these are two big guys that they're going to need to be good in order for, like, this sort of rebuild to work. So,
yes, John Beilein would say it's a renaissance.
Yes, I'm sorry.
The word rebuild's not welcome in the organization. Yeah, it's okay.
I'm going to grade it on a curve a little bit. Am I allowed to?
Yeah,
100%. Because I think, like, nothing in this rebuild truly matters until they have their next franchise player. And so to do that, you either have to win a lottery or you get a top two pick, or just hit one of these picks out of the park and draft a guy completely you know, get a star later in the draft. And I think they took some, I think with Garland and Porter, they took two big swings.
Yes.
And so that's, I think that was smart, and that's one way to accelerate it. And if it doesn't work, you're going to be back in the running to win the lottery again next year, which is the other way to go.
Yeah, so. And then you could get Jim. Like, there's, that's, you want that guy.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. So I'll give a, I don't think I can give him an A. I'm a tough grader. I'll go B plus.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And I was just going to say, too, this is being way too optimistic, but, like, what if best case scenario with Kevin Porter Jr. is that maybe he's not the level of RJ Barrett, but, like, he's that type of player. If you get that type of production from a guy who people think, especially before the season at USC, that, like, he was going to be that type of player, like, okay, that's maybe the best case scenario. But then you can understand where in the draft room they're like, well, if this is this kid's ceiling, we can get him at 30, and we can get Garland at 5 without having to move or give anything up, like, then let's do it. And so, like, to what Ben said, like, I'd so much rather them take big swings than, like, the Hunter thing to me would have been, like, I get it, but it wouldn't feel sort of like the upside and ability.
I get it for Atlanta because, like, they have Trey, they have Herder, they're a year ahead of the
Cavs.
They have their franchise guy.
Yeah, they have Trey, they have John Collins, they have Herder looks all, yeah, they have that working, and maybe you could argue they overpaid to get up to 4, but it's like Hunter makes, like, clear sense for them. I will also say, just like, I think if you think about Porter in particular, I think if you think about him in Beeline's offense, that's like the Garland Sexton fit in that offense will be really interesting to me. But if you think about what Beeline's offense does, it's about the flow, it's about giving guys really good chances to go and, like, make plays. Like, that's like the, like, Porter would seem like a guy that if you get him in the system, you can, like, hone his skills and develop him the right way. He might really thrive in that way. Like, if you can get him easier looks instead of him having to rely on his athleticism, that's a more efficient use of that athleticism. Like, I can understand that logic a little bit. And then if Windler can be the shooter, like, they really need that on this roster. Let's wrap it up on this. I've been pre-writing a thing on the team needs heading into free agency. They won't have a lot of money. They're just not going to be free agency players. It's going to be very minor moves. I'm just going to run through these and tell me how we feel like they maybe address those. And if you guys have any other ones, we'll throw them in there as well. I think wing defense is the biggest one. They clearly did not address that. We're curious to see what Kobe Allman has to say about it. I think bringing back David Nwaba makes just like a world of sense for after this roster. He's a restricted free agent. They'll have some leverage on him. But I think for me, wing defense remains the biggest need on this roster.
I think just wing in general.
Yeah, just like, bodies on the wing, yes.
Yeah, it's very point guard heavy now and very big man heavy. So, and they just need to, like, fill that like, they need, two small forwards and, preferably defensive-minded ones.
Here's the roster breakdown. Front court, Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson, Larry Nance Jr., John Henson, Ante Zizic, and then Marquise Chris has a cap hold, but you would assume he's probably not back. On the wing, you have Brandon Knight, Jordan Clarkson, Delly, Garland, Sexton, and then Osman is really the one sort of true wing. Nick Stauskas is sort of a quasi-wing as well. Jaron Blossom gave him a two-way contract. Dang Adele on two-way contracts. But they have, like, no wings. I think Ben's let's get some 6'7" dudes in here to, like, at least be on the roster.
Yeah, they just have to find a way to not let everybody just blow by them on the perimeter. Like, they just,
or at least, like, try.
Yes.
Like, let's just go for some effort.
Be able to, like, play the pick and roll like a modern defense should be able to. Like, they just don't have a lot of guys. So yeah, the wing I would probably agree with you is probably, especially defensively, is their biggest need.
Yes.
I'd like to, like, the front court to just kind of make sense, like, in terms of, like, they have this collection of Love and Tristan and Nance, and it's like, where do these guys all fit in with each other in the modern NBA?
You would assume there's going to be
it's so hard to project what this roster is, like, going to look like with all the expiring contracts.
The one question, I guess, the big picture question I have coming out of the draft, more so than the other stuff we've talked about, is, like, I think the roster just has to change before opening night in some way, or the deadline at the very least. There's just so much expiring money that it has to get flipped for things that maybe help, that are cohesive things that come in. Like, if you can overpay for a wing, like, TJ Warren would have made sense to me, right? Like, I think that kind of contract coming in makes sense. I have secondary creation on this list. I think it's still a need, But you get in Garland, I can't imagine you're not going to give him and Sexton and Jetty, because I think he should do really well in Beilein's system. And if Kevin Love's healthy, that's less of a need. But, like, having someone like Stauskas or Furkan Korkmaz or maybe Jeremy Lamb, I think, who would fill the wing need as well, I think those guys, that kind of need, I think, makes sense as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, Lamb is somebody that I've sort of had an eye on since I realized he was going to be a free agent, just because, like, had a career year. I don't know, like, what kind of contract he's going
to That's the thing.
Demand.
They can only pay, like, up to, it's like $5.7 million on the mini-mid level.
But, you know, he's a decent defender. He can shoot from three. So, yeah, somebody sort of in that mold is absolutely, and maybe if you can get him for, yeah, I don't know. I mean, you probably know their cap situation better than I do.
It's really bad. I would just, so right now, Jeff Siegel from Early Bird Rights has these. I would just favor this. It's really useful to have. They have negative $54 million in cap space right now. They are $10 million over the tax line as well. We don't know if they're actually willing to pay the tax either. Like, J.R. Smith is like your escape hatch to that, because he's only guaranteed like $3 million. So you cut him and you just kind of do small moves, you're fine. But
I don't think they're going to cut JR. I don't have my hopes high for a JR trade.
So after this night, that's
weird that it hasn't moved tonight.
Like, I thought Oklahoma City at 21. Mozgov's contract from the Magic at 16, Miami at 13.
Yeah, I thought Miami made a ton. The thing is, like, because we went through this with the Brendan Haywood contract, because it was kind of the same deal.
That's a great point.
And I think we get our hopes a little too high about, I think it's really hard for teams, and obviously salary dumps happen, but I think it's really hard for teams to, you know, send away a draft pick for just cap relief. I think that's a tough message to send to a fan base, even if it's a smart move. I think because we saw some salary dumps happen earlier in the month, and, you know, it kind of seemed like, oh, man, if they can get this for that, then the Cavs are in good shape. I think you need a perfect match, and that perfect match isn't already always there.
Yeah, it feels like J.R. Smith's contract value has, like, on Twitter and media-wise, has been, like, way overblown, because I was going into the night, like, they're definitely going to move it, and they're going to get a great pick from it, and it just it doesn't appear that other NBA teams have valued it the way we might have initially. So,
no.
We'll see. I mean, the second round's still going on. I don't know what the outcome of it's going to be, but, yeah, it seems like it was a bit overvalued.
And I just want to say, I think it sucks that this is the end of the J.R. thing. That sucks.
It's a bummer of a way to go out.
If he wants to re-sign, that takes care of one of the wing things.
Yeah, there we go.
If you're listening, if you're listening, which I know you are, to this podcast.
I don't know if
bring back Shump and get the
free agent this summer. Could a whole bunch of things. There's a whole bunch of just really good options here. All right, so then I think you look at and it's weird because I'm going to say this, because you look at the bigs, like, they probably need some rim protection. Like, they don't have like a actual good, like, Nance kind of is. Tristan was awesome when he was healthy last year, but wore down over the season. So Kevin's not a defensive
John
center.
Henson?
He hasn't played a game in a year. But, like, might not be in the roster in like 2 weeks.
Yeah, I don't know what they're. Yeah. I don't know.
I just feel like they need like a guy who can, kind of at least protect Kevin a little bit better. Like, I feel like we don't know how Larry and Kevin play together, like, really at all. I don't think there's a lot of data and film for us to really know that. Tristan and Kevin was obviously very good in 16. Tristan's a different guy now. He just hasn't held up physically the last couple of seasons. So
he might
not be on the roster. There's just, like, I think there's, like, a need there. I don't know. That and shooting are sort of weird things, but, former Cavs pick option, Nerlens Noel, like, could be cheap. Keem Birch from the Magic could be restricted free agent. Chris Boucher from Toronto, G League Player of the Year, G League MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, restricted free agent. Like, you might have to just go get a really cheap guy and see if that works. But I think it's wings above all.
Yeah.
Like, wings and shooting and defense. And, like, everything else is just, like, three very important modern things.
I definitely agree that, like...
But other than that.
Yeah, other than that, fine. Title contenders.
Offensively, I feel way better about their path. But, yeah, like we talked about earlier, like, defensively, it's still, like, what are you guys planning on doing? So, we'll see.
Yeah. Any non-Cavs draft thoughts? Any teams you feel like did really well? I think Memphis is my big winner. Just Brandon Clark and Ja Morant with JJJ is awesome.
I actually really, you know, like, we were talking, obviously Cam Reddish has been a big point of conversation because the Cavs were sort of linked to him for a little bit, but I actually thought that Atlanta, as you said, they gave up a lot to get DeAndre Hunter, but I feel like Cam Reddish landing in Atlanta was a really, really good spot for him because mm-hmm. he just isn't going to have to like be asked to do more than maybe what he's capable of, which I think would be like a death knell for him in the NBA. So I think like Atlanta with Trae Young, John Collins, and now you have Cam Reddish and DeAndre Hunter, like that's a pretty fun team, and so I think they did pretty well for themselves tonight too.
Yeah, I think you could certainly, I think, quibble with five, but it's interesting. So again, we are recording this before the second round is done. It doesn't seem like the Cavs are going to get a second round pick. If they do, we'll break it down in some way.
I don't know what they have left to trade.
Money?
JR.
Yeah, yes. JR and money.
Maybe if no one takes Bol Bol, they're just like, do you want $10? Like, just come to us.
Yeah, you can just come hang out, play some summer league.
Bol Bol.
Utah summer league all-star Bol Bol.
The sad pictures of Bol Bol at his draft table are coming out.
I feel quite bad for him. Yeah. He left, apparently, according to Twitter.
Tough.
He left, but
how did they not get that intel before?
I know.
Like,
yeah, you know,
they're so connected. Like,
yeah, I don't know.
I mean, the top 10 of the draft was out like before 6:30.
Yeah, Woj just had this in pen for like
right, like
a while.
Like, here's what's happening.
Jordan Clarkson had this in pen for a while. I don't mean to disrespect the newsbreaker extraordinaire Jordan Clarkson, but. This is an interesting night. We are not done yet. There's still like 20 picks to go as we record this, but it's like going really slow. It's already 11:30. Like this draft.
We knew like it wasn't a particularly deep draft, but like I mean, we talked about not even knowing the third guy the Cavs picked, and it's like they got past like after Cam Reddish got taken at 11, or Cam Johnson got taken at 11, it was like. Man, this fell off a cliff.
Yes.
Like, who are these guys? There was a run on foreign players. Like, it was. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you could have hit the draft bingo tonight.
Yeah, you really could have. Spurs taking an international guy, check. The Sixers have another guy who maybe can't shoot jump shots, and Matisse Thybulle, who I do really like. But
Bill Simmons had a meltdown.
Jordan and I were talking about this.
He's gone.
Noted, gets annoyed at Ben Axelrod, man, Bill Simmons.
I'm not saying Bill Simmons runs his dad's Twitter account, but if he did, how would it look any differently?
Yeah, that's a good point. It's been really satisfactory to just watch, and it's been like, he was tweeting like every 2 minutes for a little bit.
Yeah.
So that's
a long way from the James Young fist pump. We're quite a long ways from that.
That didn't really work out either.
No, that didn't work out. He's very out of the league right now, but the Cavs could do something else. Kobe Almond still has to talk, but I wanted to not ask these guys to stay super late with me in the arena, and like I'm going to want to go to bed after this because like this is late for my old 26-year-old body.
I realize we got here like 6:15.
Yeah.
It is now going nearing midnight. So it's
like let's go, guys.
Let's wrap it up.
Maybe split this up over two nights, just to do something else. But this is going to be interesting. There's going to be a lot more to come. Summer League, I think, will be really interesting this year.
And Summer League comes up like that. Like
July 1.
Soon.
And
yes.
They're playing two of them.
Yes. You get three straight days in Salt Lake, and then like right away they go to Vegas.
That'll be a lot of fun.
We'll see what the roster
looks like. Are they going to do Team Sexton and Team Garland?
I wonder. Yeah. Yes. Split it up right away. I wonder if they'll, like, come in. I wonder how they'll handle that. Like, will Jetty play Summer League? This would be year three for him. Like, that's, like, kind of when you don't play Summer League.
Unless you're J.J. Hickson.
Yeah.
And you go in and just dominate it.
Yeah, J.J. Hickson. Just trying to get some workouts in, man.
Just trying to get some run. Dude.
Yeah, just need some pickup time. Just trying to hang out.
Run.
Yeah, trying to hang out. But it's going to be interesting. We'll see what Kobe has to say. We'll see what insight he offers. We'll see if they do anything else. But, guys, thanks so much for joining me.
Absolutely.
Chris, thanks.
Hopefully I'll get to bed soon.